The Assassin.
You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest. You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest.
What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trop, and I'm your host, Katie Trop. Well, I told you guys on Friday, the vibe in Germany was crazy. And let me tell you, on Sunday, on game day, that stayed true. Man, it was awesome to watch. Just the wave of people just walking into this arena and just the excitement and just how fucking awesome it was. And they got a good game, too. I mean, at first, it started out as a runaway, but it got real close there in the end. So let's get right into the game. It was the Seattle Seahawks at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, of course, in Munich, Germany. So the Bucs were the home team. And the Bucs came right out the gate and were dominating offensively. As a matter of fact, in typical Tom Brady fashion, this is going to at some point be a trivia question at some point. But Tom Brady, of course, scored the first touchdown in the first ever German game. It was a touchdown pass to Julio Jones. Beautiful pass and run, by the way. Julio Jones, good for him too. But that's just typical. It's of course got to be Tom Brady, and so now he has done something else more historic. So the Buccaneers did end up winning this game 21-16. And like I said, it was a runaway for the most part up until the fourth quarter. The Seahawks did give it a good run in the fourth quarter, but I mean, the Bucs really were just too much. The Bucs were able to put a good game together offensively, but also defensively. They made Geno Smith look pretty normal. I mean, he still had a pretty solid game. He went 23 for 33, 275 yards and 2 touchdowns. So it wasn't a terrible game for him. But they did sack him. They did have him, especially in the first half. He was throwing balls everywhere. He had no idea what was going on, and so they really threw him for a loop at the beginning of the game. But then as the game wore on, the Seahawks did end up getting it going, but it was just far too late. The Buccaneers did get the win 21-16. Chris Godwin, he had a really good game. He had 6 receptions, 71 yards, 1 touchdown. The Bucs really just had that was exactly what they needed. They got the win the week before against the Rams, and then they were able to get this win against the Seahawks, a good Seahawks team. And they are now heading into their bye. But I will say, because after the game, Tom Brady spoke, and he said, and this says a lot because the dude's been around since the dinosaurs, he said that this was one of the most memorable games he's ever played in his life. Just because of the atmosphere and just, you know, obviously it was the first game in Germany and it was a win. So it could be the turning point of their season, but that says a lot when the GOAT, the dude who's been around forever and for always and literally accomplished everything and has basically done everything you can in football, he still is like, oh, wow, this is a great accomplishment. Yet another notch in my belt, basically. But it was a good game and good for the Germans. They got first game in Germany. It turned out great. We'll see what happens next year. I believe they are in Frankfurt next year. I know they're not in Munich again. I know they're in a completely different city, and I'm almost positive it's Frankfurt next year. But regardless, looking forward to all these Germany games because this first one was a spectacular welcome from the Germans. So great game to start the weekend off. Then the morning games over here in America. The first game we had was the New Orleans Saints versus the Pittsburgh Steelers. And good for the Steelers because for once the Steelers pretty much dominated the game from start to finish. They got the win 20-10. Kenny Pickett had a really solid game. He went 18 for 30, 199 yards. He also had a rushing touchdown. Najee Harris had a solid game as well. He rushed for 99 yards. And then, of course, the Steelers did end up getting T.J. Watt back on the defensive side of the ball. So they just had a really solid overall game, whereas the Saints, they did not look good at all. It was turnover central. I don't know how much better Jameis Winston is over Andy Dalton. I really don't know if it matters at this point for the Saints. But what the Saints are putting on the field right now is absolute shit. And it looked like it against a horrible team in the Steelers. Then the game of the day, for damn sure, was the Minnesota Vikings at the Buffalo Bills. This game went into overtime. And the sequence of events from about the mid-fourth quarter till overtime, because this game did go into overtime. But, I mean, first of all, the Bills were dominating this game. I mean, in the first quarter, they scored 14 points. Second quarter, they scored 10. And they are just looking like the Vikings have no shot. I mean, Kirk Cousins was doing what he always does. He's throwing interceptions when he shouldn't be throwing interceptions. He's getting sacked. He was just having an all-around terrible game to start. Then the fourth quarter strikes, and the Bills are driving, and they have a fourth and two, and they're in the red zone, and they are at this point up 27-17. And in most cases, you should just kick the field goal, take the points. But the Bills got greedy, and this was the huge turning point in the game. They went for it on fourth and two instead of just taking the points. And what happens? Josh Allen ends up throwing an interception, and the Vikings end up driving down the field, scoring a touchdown, and getting within, what, like 5 points, I believe. They got him within, I think, 4 or 5 points. And so the Bills come back out on the field, and they just lay an egg. It's an immediate three and out. They just look like trash, and they look stunned. So then they punt the ball to the Vikings, and the Vikings start driving again. And the Vikings are getting closer and closer and closer, and finally they get into the red zone. And this insane sequence of events happens that I don't think I've ever seen in my 37 years of life watching football. And that is, okay, the Vikings get down to the goal line. You know, it's first and goal, and there's a couple of plays that are just really close. There's this one pass on third and goal. And it's a completed pass, and it looks like he's just so close to the end zone. But on replay, you'll see he is down at the 1 yard line. All right, cool. So the Vikings opt to go for it on fourth and goal, of course, because they needed the touchdown. They could not just kick the field goal. So Kirk Cousins takes the quarterback sneak, and he is stopped at the goal line. So you're thinking, oh my God, the Bills, their defense stood him up. And they've got this in the bag now. Well, the Bills come out. And, of course, since this was a goal line stand, the Bills are at their own goal line. And what ends up happening is Josh Allen ends up fumbling the ball when he takes the snap. And the Vikings end up scoring a touchdown. And so we're all tied up here. The Vikings take a lead by 3 points. And then the Bills are able to get down the field. And right before overtime, they're able to kick 3 points, tie the game up. We go into overtime. Then in overtime, the Vikings get the ball first. They drive down the field, score 3 points, boom, boom, pow. Bills come out, and they go on a really nice drive. They're driving. And then Josh Allen throws another red zone interception, and that's how the game ends. And so it was just one of the craziest games ever. Like I said, especially mid-fourth quarter after that first Josh Allen red zone interception, that's when it really changed. But from that moment on, that was one of the craziest games I've ever watched. The Vikings did end up getting the win 33-30. Kirk Cousins, even though he had his follies, he still had a pretty solid game. He went 30 for 50, 357 yards and a touchdown. Dalvin Cook had a great game. He had 14 carries, 119 yards, and one touchdown. But the dude of the game, Justin motherfucking Jefferson, 10 receptions, 193 yards, one touchdown, and one insane catch. Well, guess what? Stephon Diggs, on one drive, he had an amazing catch. He had this one-handed grab, And it was actually on the drive when Josh Allen ended up throwing that his first interception in the red zone. And so then on the following drive, when the Vikings are driving down the field and on a fourth down play, Justin Jefferson and the Bills defender are up in the air. You know, Kirk Cousins just tosses up a prayer for Jefferson. Jefferson literally gets one hand on the ball. The defender has his two hands on the ball. So one of these guys is either going to come down with it or it's just going to fall and hit the ground. Jefferson is somehow able to just keep his hand on the ball and then just wrestle it away. And he ends up making this insane catch. It was literally the play of the day, probably play of the year. One of the greatest catches of all time, and just an excellent game. Really, the Bills handed this game to the Vikings. The Vikings had no business winning this game. It was just the Bills got too greedy in that fourth quarter. On that fourth quarter drive, they should have just taken the field goal. Obviously, you never know what's going to happen, but that interception gave the Bills so much momentum, and the Vikings are 8-1. Then we had the Detroit Lions at the Chicago Bears. This also ended up being another crazy game, too. It was back and forth, two shitty teams. The Lions did walk away with the win 31-30. The crazy thing is it looked like the Bears were going to run away with this game. But then the fourth quarter hits, and the Lions just get that surge. They ended up scoring 21 points in the fourth quarter. They did get the win 31-30, and it was just the Justin Fields show yet again. This guy had 13 carries for 147 yards and two touchdowns. He had a 61-yard run. He just is something else. And like I continue to say about the Bears, please, for the love of God, do not waste this talent, and please get him some help next year. Do not waste this talent with Justin Fields, because Justin Fields is an exciting player to watch, and it would really suck to see this talent be wasted because the Bears don't get him any help. But he was fighting till the end. I mean, even on the fourth down, there was a fourth down play to end the game, and the Bears were just basically throwing up a prayer, and they really could not even tackle Justin Fields. Eventually they did, but that guy, he just is something else. Lions did walk away with the win. Jared Goff had a pretty solid day. He went 19 for 26, 236 yards and one touchdown. And his go-to guy was Amon-Ra St. Brown, who had 10 receptions and 119 yards. Then the Denver Broncos were at the Tennessee Titans. And the Broncos just continue to just suck out loud on the offensive side of things here. Derrick Henry didn't even have that great of a game. He only had 53 yards. Tannehill came back. He had a very solid game, but I mean, overall, this was not a dominating game by the Titans. This was really just the Broncos are that bad. They only scored their touchdown, because of poor coverage, blown coverage on the play. And they were just lucky to get that touchdown. But other than that, they can't even get into the red zone. Russell Wilson went 21 for 42. So he had 42 pass attempts, 286 yards and one touchdown. The Broncos are just terrible on the offensive side of things. Titans did get the win 17-10. The Titans are exactly what the Titans are. They're just such a weird team. It's always difficult to, tell when they're going to win and when they're going to lose. And when they win, it's just really ugly and you don't really know how they did it, but, they somehow did it. I don't know if they're like a legit team. I really see them actually winning their division, obviously, because their division has the Colts, the Texans, and the Jaguars in it. So they should easily win this division, but damn. Other than Derrick Henry, they're a pretty light team, but not as light as the shitty-ass Broncos. And the sad thing is with the Broncos, they have the number one defense in the league, but they're 3-6. And that's just because their offense is that terrible. Then the Jacksonville Jaguars were at the Kansas City Chiefs, and that game went as expected. The Chiefs demolished the Jaguars 27-17. Patrick Mahomes had yet another amazing day. He went 26 for 35, 331 yards, and four touchdowns. it's going to be really interesting to see if anybody in this league is able to catch up with how many touchdowns Patrick Mahomes has thrown for this season, because he just padded. I think he had like a four touchdown lead last week. So now he just added four more to the pile there. So Patrick Mahomes just making the case for that MVP. I will say Christian Kirk, he actually had a good game for the Jaguars. He had 9 receptions, 105 yards, and 2 touchdowns. Actually wasn't a horrible game for the Jaguars. I feel like the Chiefs should have won by a lot more, but the Jaguars have a little bit of fight in them, so they were able to at least score 17 points, but the Chiefs do what the Chiefs do. Then the Cleveland Browns were at the Miami Dolphins, and the Dolphins just demolished the Browns. I don't even think the Browns were aware that a game was being played that day, because the Dolphins won 39-17. Tua Tagovailoa, he had a great game. He went 25 for 32, 285 yards and 3 touchdowns. Their running back, it wasn't Mostert this week, it was Wilson Jr. They just traded for him, by the way, from the 49ers. Walks right into this game, 17 carries, 119 yards, and 1 touchdown. So this Dolphins offense really got more potent with the addition of Wilson Jr. at running back, because now they have 2 solid running backs. They have 2 solid wide receivers. They have a solid quarterback and a solid offensive line. Offensively, the Dolphins ain't nothing to fuck with, as the Browns just found out. Then the Houston Texans were at the New York Giants, and that went as expected. The Giants dominated the Texans 24-16. Davis Mills actually had a good game for the Texans at quarterback. He went 22 for 37, 319 yards, and 1 touchdown. But it was all about Saquon Barkley for the Giants, of course. He had 35 carries, 152 yards, and 1 touchdown. So that guy... talk about MVP for Mahomes. If Mahomes wasn't having that such a lights out season, you might want to put Barkley in that conversation, which you could probably still put Barkley in the conversation. But we all know MVP always leads towards quarterbacks. But I kind of feel like it's undeniable at this point that Mahomes is probably the MVP. And unless somebody else this season really or unless Mahomes like has a huge fall off in the second half and somebody else has a huge gain, I think it's Mahomes to win. But Barkley is he's having a great year. Definitely comeback player of the year for sure. And then the receiver of choice for the Giants yesterday was also Darius Slayton. He had 95 yards and a touchdown. Then the Dallas Cowboys were at the Green Bay Packers, and very disappointing game from the Cowboys on this end. The Packers did get the win in overtime, 31-28. In my opinion, it shouldn't have even gone to overtime, because the Cowboys pretty much just blew this one away as well. They had a lead, 28-14 at one point in the second half. But it was just a shit show, and I could tell that it was going to be a shit show once the second half began, because the Cowboys' defense just did not look good at all yesterday. The secondary was getting blown up in coverage all fucking day. And you can't do that against Aaron Rodgers. It doesn't matter how shitty his team is. You can never, ever, ever count out Aaron Rodgers. And guess what? He found his dude yesterday. Christian Watkins had 3 freaking touchdowns against the Cowboys. But Aaron Jones had an amazing day, and it's kind of like the Packers have been listening to me all season, me telling them that they need to just go through Aaron Jones and keep that running game going. Dylan, he's having a great year too. Just keep pounding away the rock with that ground attack. Well, they listened to me for this fucking game, because Aaron Jones had 24 carries, 138 yards, and a touchdown, and the Cowboys defense could not even stop that ground attack yesterday. They couldn't stop shit yesterday. The offense wasn't too bad. Dak had 2 pretty bad interceptions that sucked. It was really just the Cowboys' stupid penalties that cost them. And then in overtime, they had stupid penalties that cost them. And it was really just those dumb-ass stupid penalties, as always, that bite them in the ass, back them up, because there was multiple times in the game yesterday where they either had a first down or got a really solid game that was taken back because of a stupid holding call or some dumb shit like that. Beyond the two interceptions, Dak Prescott had a pretty solid day. He went 27 for 46, 265 yards and three touchdowns. CeeDee Lamb had an amazing day. He had 11 receptions, 150 yards and two touchdowns. But overall, Dallas defense couldn't get any pressure on Aaron Rodgers at all. They were blowing coverage all day. The ground attack was just flawless for the Packers and just an absolutely poor showing by the Cowboys. And they better fucking step it up this week because they're going to Minnesota. This shit ain't getting any easier. Still have faith in them, though. I mean, you're going to have a bad game here and there, especially with the way the defense has played. I kind of have a feeling next week Micah Parsons is really going to be in the face of Kirk Cousins, but I'll save that prediction for Friday's show. Then the Indianapolis Colts were at the Las Vegas Raiders, and I got to say, this was such a shocking end. The Colts ended up getting the win 25-20, and the reason why it was so shocking is because it looked like the Raiders were going to get this win. And it's just, the Raiders are so typical, and this has been them for many years now, but it's just so sad to see, especially because, you know, Derek Carr was literally just seething and crying at the podium yesterday after this loss, just because they lost in such poor fashion. You know, he actually did drive them down the field. They could have scored a touchdown, and his tight end just drops the ball. I mean, the defender did have a good play on the ball too, but still, it was just heartbreaking to see, you know, Derek Carr, he's really pissed off at the podium. He's calling out other players, not by name, but he did say that it's sad to see that he and other guys are putting in all this effort and literally putting their bodies on the line just to walk away with a 25-20 loss. And he kind of feels like some other players are not stepping up to the plate like he and Davante Adams are. Derek Carr did have a pretty solid day. He went 24 for 38, 248 yards and two touchdowns. Davante Adams, I mean, really, he has been a huge addition for them offensively. I mean, other than I think one game this season, Davante has just had a lights out season. He had 9 receptions, 126 yards and a touchdown. And then on the opposite side of things, I mean, Indianapolis, they actually put together a really solid game. You know, last minute it was announced that Matt Ryan was actually going to be the starting quarterback for this game. And he held it down and also had a rushing touchdown also. Jonathan Taylor, he finally had a great game. He had 22 carries, 147 yards and a touchdown. And then Stephon Gilmore, he basically made the play of the game at the end to knock away that pass from Derek Carr just so they wouldn't go ahead. So it was a really nice play by Stephon Gilmore. And actually just a really good game overall for the Colts, especially, you know, Jeff Saturday's first game coaching as the interim coach. But just very sad to see for the Raiders, especially to watch Derek Carr at the podium yesterday. That I've seen the clip now multiple times today, and it's just kind of, you know, it's always sad to see a grown man cry. Now, he's not like weeping, crying, but it's just how much the game means to him. And I understand his frustration because he is right. There are guys like him who are putting their bodies on the line. We don't know what kind of ailments they have. Even if they aren't listed on the injury report, every guy at this point in the season who's playing the game of football is injured to some level. And Monday or the day after a game is always hell for their bodies. I mean, if you've ever seen any documentaries or any, sometimes on the pregame shows, they've shown interviews with guys after a game day, and usually the next day after game day, they could barely walk, especially if they're old guys. And I remember specifically watching one with Jerome Bettis when it was his last season with the Steelers, and he could barely walk down the stairs the following day. So you are putting your body on the line in this game, and it is sad to see when you are putting so much effort into it and then to walk away and not even, the Raiders are 2-7 and they're not a good those two wins are barely, and it's just like they've lost multiple games where they've had leads and they've just had terrible losses this season. So sucks to see for Derek Carr because he really is a solid, he just seems like a solid dude, and he definitely deserves better. So does Davante Adams, but that's what happens when you play for the Raiders. Then the last afternoon game was the Arizona Cardinals at the Los Angeles Rams. Very surprising game because both quarterbacks for both teams did not end up playing. Kyler Murray ended up missing the game with a hamstring injury, and Matthew Stafford ended up missing the game for the Rams because he had a concussion. So Colt McCoy, who is still in the league, is still the backup quarterback for the Cardinals. He led them to a spectacular win. The Cardinals actually looked in sync and looked like they had a really good game for once. This was probably their best win of the season. They got the win 27-17. They had the lead pretty much the whole way through. And Colt McCoy, like I said, he had a great game. He went 26 for 37, 238 yards and one touchdown. James Conner, he had a good day on the ground, 21 carries, 69 yards and two touchdowns. DeAndre Hopkins also had a good game, 10 receptions, 98 yards. So just an all-around solid day for the Cardinals and another bad day for the Rams. And it looks like Cooper Kupp now is injured with a significant ankle injury. I wouldn't be shocked if he at least misses this next game. I would imagine he's going to be missing at least a couple of games, if not more than that. But he suffered a pretty significant injury, and we have yet to hear what the significance of it is yet. And then the Sunday night game, Los Angeles Chargers at the San Francisco 49ers. It was a back and forth game in the first half, but then the Chargers came out in the second half and just laid a complete egg. I mean, it looked like they were going to win this game, and then the second half started and they were nowhere to be found. 49ers ended up getting the win 22-16. And it was just really weird to see the Chargers, man. You just don't know what to expect from this stupid-ass team because they really were taking it to the 49ers. I mean, they were getting some good plays on offense. They were really stifling the Niners' offense. And then the fourth quarter hits, and then the Niners were able to score 9 points and just get enough points to get the win. But it really was not a spectacular game from either team. But, I mean, the Chargers looked like they were going to come right out. They started off the game real hot on offense. And like I said, nothing in the second half. And then, of course, they get the ball with a minute left to go in the fourth quarter. And it looks like they have a shot at maybe just taking a drive down the field. And literally on first down, Justin Herbert comes right out and just tosses a really stupid interception. Now, I granted, his arm was hit in motion, but, it was just a bad game from the Chargers. And, Justin Herbert, he's got a great arm. And he also, of course, has some growth because, I mean, he's only a couple years into the league, of course. But, right now, the Chargers are not looking like they are going to use his talent wisely. And that's just awful. But that's typical Chargers for you. All right. And then we have tonight's Monday night matchup is the Washington Redskins football team Commanders at the Philadelphia Eagles. Right now, the Eagles are a 10.5-point favorite. And I would not be surprised if Washington was able to get the upset tonight because this is a division matchup. I do think it's going to be a close game. I don't really see Philadelphia running away with this one. Even though they are great on the ground attack, they should get some good runs in this game. And I do expect them to get the win, but I really think it's going to be a battle for them to get their points. But I do think defensively they're just going to take care of business, and Washington's just not going to be able to even compete offensively. And I think Philadelphia is going to get the win 24-10. All right, now let's get to my top 10 NBA power rankings. My Los Angeles Lakers are still nowhere to be found in the top 10 NBA power rankings this season because they fucking suck still. Don't know what the hell's going on with them, but if you'd like to hear me rant on about how pissed off I am at being at the Lakers right now, you can tune in to my Trop It Like It's Hot segment on Sports View with Simon Ruvalcaba. I don't know if he's posted it just yet. It should be posting today, tomorrow maybe. If not, I will definitely have it posted on my website, katietrop.net, on Friday with all of my shows from the week's recap. So let's get into the actual good teams in the NBA, starting off with number one, the Milwaukee Bucks. They did finally suffer two losses this week. Atlanta was able to give them their first loss. The Spurs were able to give them their second loss. They are 10-2 on the season. They did beat Oklahoma City earlier in the week. But I mean, really, the only reason why they lost to San Antonio is because Giannis did not play in that game. But I mean, really, Giannis is just dominating. I mean, he's having yet another amazing season. And the Bucks, they lead the league right now in rebounds, and they just are, I mean, there's really nothing bad you could say about them. They're playing great basketball right now, and they are still number one in my top 10. Then at number two on my top 10 NBA power rankings, I have the Boston Celtics, overall record of 10-3. They are currently on a 6-game winning streak, which is the longest winning streak in the NBA right now. This week, they beat the Memphis Grizzlies, Detroit Pistons, Denver Nuggets, and the Detroit Pistons again. And it's really just all about Jason Tatum. He is just on fire. He's averaging over 30 points a game. I think he's averaging 32 points a game, if I remember correctly. They right now are first in points per game. They lead the league with 120 points per game right now. So Boston has not missed a step, even with that drama with Udoka in the offseason. Then at number three on my top 10 NBA power rankings, I have the Phoenix Suns, overall record of 8-4. This week they lost to the 76ers and the Orlando Magic, but they beat the Minnesota Timberwolves. And it just continues to be all about that big three of Devin Booker, DeAndre Ayton, and CP3. Booker's getting the points, Ayton's getting the rebounds, and CP3's just dishing out that rock. So look out for the Suns. They are still dominating. I don't know if they'll be able to do that in the postseason because that's always questionable with them. But right now, they are kicking some ass in the regular season. Then at number four in my top 10 NBA power rankings, I have the Denver Nuggets, overall record of 9-4. This past week, they got wins against the San Antonio Spurs, the Indiana Pacers, and the Chicago Bulls, and lost to the Boston Celtics. And they are first in the league in field goal percentage and 3 points. Three-point percentage, and it's just all about Nikola Jokic. I mean, he has got to be the most silent assassin in the league. Nobody is talking about him, and if you go and look, just look at the stats for Denver, like just at the leaders, who leads in this category and who leads in that category, it's basically Jokic. He is like the entire motherfucking team. It's looking like, yes, I know it's very early in the season, but Jokic could be winning yet another MVP because this guy is the Denver Nuggets and he is still dominating at an extremely high level. It's insane to watch. Then at number five on my top 10 NBA power rankings, I have the Portland Trail Blazers, overall record of 9-4. This past week, they beat the Miami Heat, the Charlotte Hornets, and the New Orleans Pelicans, and lost to the Dallas Mavericks. And this team's really just revolves around Damian Lillard. They are playing just great basketball overall. And we'll see if they're able to maintain it. I don't really know if I believe in them quite yet. I kind of feel like this is a first half type of deal. I mean, you always got to watch out for Lillard getting injured. But right now, Blazers looking real good. Then at number six on my top 10 NBA power rankings, I have the Cleveland Cavaliers. They have fallen quite a bit from last week, being at number two. They are 8-5 overall, and it's really just because they are on a 4-game losing streak right now. They lost to the Clippers, the Kings, the Golden State Warriors, and the Minnesota Timberwolves this week. But Donovan Mitchell, even though they've lost these games, Donovan Mitchell is the spark plug, man. He is just running things. He fits right in. And then he had Darius Garland earlier this week. He dropped 51 points. Even though it was a loss, come on, 51 points. That ain't nothing to balk at. So Cavaliers, while they are on a 4-game losing streak, I'm not really surprised by that. I kind of have a feeling they're going to be a streaky team this year, but I still think they're going to be a good team that ends up making the playoffs because A, they're in the Eastern Conference, and B, they are, I think, a legit team this year. Then at number 7 on my top 10 NBA power rankings, I have the Memphis Grizzlies, overall record of 9-5. This past week, they lost to the Boston Celtics and the Washington Wizards, and they got wins against the San Antonio Spurs and the Minnesota Timberwolves. Really, this team's all about Ja Morant. He is just scoring points like no other. He's getting rebounds like no other. He's basically like Jokic as well, where he basically leads his entire team in every single category, I believe, except for rebounds. But yeah, the Grizzlies, while they're not as noisy as they were last year, still a very solid and good team. Then at number 8 on my top 10 NBA power rankings, I have the Atlanta Hawks, overall record of 8-5. This past week, they beat the Milwaukee Bucks, handed them their first loss, and beat the Philadelphia 76ers. So those are two really good teams. And they lost to the Utah Jazz and then the Philadelphia 76ers. And this team, it just is running through Trae Young and DeJounte Murray. They are just scoring a lot of points. As I mentioned, the defense, their defense is very shaky and shoddy, and that's definitely going to be their problem as the season goes on, unless they're able to make some type of a trade or something. But really, I don't think it matters because just Trae Young and Murray, they make a great tandem, as I expected them to. And they are playing great basketball right now. Then at number 9 on my top 10 NBA power rankings, I have the Dallas Mavericks, overall record of 7-5. They got wins this week against the Brooklyn Nets and the Portland Trail Blazers and lost to the Orlando Magic and the Washington Wizards. And this team is just all about Luka. It's basically like Jokic. With the Nuggets, Luka is that way with the Mavericks. He just has he dominates in every statistical category for them, and this entire team runs through Luka. So it's going to be interesting to see how this Mavericks season keeps chugging along, because he doesn't have a lot of help. But we'll see how things keep progressing. But Luka, he is just on fire so far this season. And then rounding out my top 10 NBA power rankings is the Utah Jazz, overall record of 10-5. This week they got wins against the Lakers and the Hawks and lost to the Wizards and the 76ers. Right now they are actually second in the league in points per game, averaging 117 points per game. And it's all about Markkanen. This guy is just having a great season, and everybody else around him is having a great season. I don't know what's going on with the Utah Jazz. I mean, they lose pretty much their entire team last year. They lose their coach. They lose their two superstars in Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert. And they're still 10-5, still one of the best teams in the league, still tops in the Western Conference. So we'll see how much longer this ends up lasting. But Jazz still looking really solid this season. All right, and then UFC 281 this weekend did not disappoint. I mean, 4 of these of the fights just were spectacular. Starting with the main event was Israel Adesanya versus Alex Pereira. And guess what, y'all? I told you Adesanya was going to get upset in this one. And Pereira did it again. As I mentioned on Friday's show, Pereira and Adesanya do know each other from kickboxing. They came up in the ranks in kickboxing. And Pereira was the only guy to knock out Adesanya then in kickboxing. And now he's the only guy to knock him out in the UFC. And he did it in UFC 281. And what a fight it was. First of all, it was a technical knockout in round 5. And man, both of these guys, they fought their asses off. I mean, this fight could have gone either way. If it would have gone to the card, it would have, to the judges' cards, scorecards, to see who won, it really would have been interesting, because it was close the entire way through, all the way up until that technical knockout. They both got in great shots at each other. Neither one really got one on the other up until about the 3rd round. That's when Pereira seemed to keep getting stronger. He kept going and going like the Energizer Bunny, and he just kept getting better as the fight kept going on. And then finally in round 5 was when he really took over. He gets Adesanya kind of in the corner, and he's just like pummeling him and finally He's able to get a really good shot in at him, and that's what ended the fight. And so Adesanya finally, he has lost one match before, but that's his first knockout, and so that's only his second loss. So I would not be shocked. I kind of feel like this is gonna, there's gonna be part two of this, probably both of their next fight, as it should. I mean, what a fight between these two guys. I mean, whoa. And congrats to Pereira, man, because he comes right in and he's really dominant in UFC right now, and he could be a dude you need to watch out for. Then in the co-main event, Aveli Zhang, she submitted Carla Esparza in round two. This was not as exciting as it should have been. Esparza was kind of playing a scared game, if you ask me. She was mostly running away from Aveli when she was just on the attack. Then when they finally got on the ground, it was actually kind of round towards the end of round one, Esparza started to get a little bit more wind in her. But, I mean, Aveli Zhang just really dominated this entire thing from the jump. And she was able to get Esparza in a submission in round two. I think the fight of the night, though, went to Dustin Poirier and Michael Chandler. They put on a fight. Poirier got him to submit in round three, but whoa. Like, you could not tell who was going to win this one. I mean, when one guy would get nice shots in on the other one, the other would come right back and knock his ass out. Then when they'd get on the ground grappling, one would get in the other. Like, they just had an amazing fight between the two of them. Like I said, Poirier got the submission in round three, but what a fight from those two guys. And then in the preliminary rounds, did not expect to see this one, but, you know, sometimes in the preliminaries, you see a great fight or just a great end to a fight or just an amazing knockout or some type of crazy thing happened, and it did. Gutierrez had a knockout knee to the face in round one and ended Frankie Edgar's career right then and there. Dude retired right after the knee to the face, and, I mean, it was quick, too. And it was beautiful. It was a beautiful sight to see. I love watching shit like that. So UFC 281 did not disappoint this weekend. Phenomenal fights from every fighter, even the losers, man. But I already cannot wait for part two of Alex Pereira versus Israel Adesanya, just because I'm sure Adesanya is already ready to get back in the ring and hopefully defend his, or take back his title, because now Pereira owns it. But you really got to look out for Pereira, because I kind of have a feeling that dude's going to be the next big thing in UFC, because he's already taken UFC by storm. He's already been knocking them motherfuckers out, and Adesanya was his biggest opponent. So we'll see what happens with Pereira, but I'm already looking forward to part two of Pereira versus Adesanya. So, Dana White, I know you're getting ready to, I'm sure he's already got that penned in for sometime in the next few months, but we're all already looking forward to that one whenever it will be scheduled. So yeah, that was a great weekend of sports, guys, and I will talk to you all on Wednesday.